Hello and welcome back to the Landscape Ontario podcast. I'm your host, Karina Sinclair. In today's episode, we dive into the story of a landscaper who saw a problem in his everyday work and took a bold step to solve it, not just for himself, but for an entire sector. Our guest today is Brandon Comstock, a self-taught entrepreneur in Calgary, Alberta, and co-founder of not just one, but two very different landscape-related businesses. What began as a passion for solving problems on the job site led him to build a software company that now helps other landscapers boost their profit margins. His journey from hands-on physical labor to creating digital solutions might seem unexpected, but I think his experience will resonate with a lot of landscapers. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a creative thinker, or just someone navigating a career change, you'll appreciate how one idea can take you down a whole new path. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Brandon. Tell the audience a little bit more about your background in landscaping.
Great to be here, Karina. Thank you. So I've done landscaping all of my life. I'm here in Calgary, Alberta, the owner of Landscapers by Nature. And I've done landscaping right out of high school. So I didn't actually make it through high school. I had trouble all through school and diagnosed with ADD and all of these challenges. And I left in early grade 12, pretty close, but didn't quite make it. And got, straight into landscaping with my father's company here in Calgary. And, you know, I didn't really do any landscaping before that. He kind of just, you know, threw me to the wolves a little bit with maintenance. He brought me out to a truck and a trailer that was loaded up and gave me a list of sites that needed spring cleanups. And I had barely driven a truck to that point, let alone pull a trailer. So anyhow, I went on my way, had a few staff with me that helped me learn the equipment and that type of thing. And that was sort of my introduction to landscaping. We grew the company together, mostly in condo maintenance, just different multifamily HOAs and so on, and also some municipal maintenance contracts. So we grew the company together. We moved it out of his garage across the street to my garage because it was a little bigger. And then eventually got our first shop. That took us 4 or 5 years probably before we got it to that size. I got to start managing the day-to-day and learning about business with my dad. And it was a great experience. The best thing that he did for me was give me the opportunity to learn and make mistakes and grow the business. So it was really challenging not having any, business background or any education in it, but I've always kind of been the type of person to just learn by trying and failing over and over again. So that's how I started. I did that for about 8 years and then transitioned away from that and started Landscapers by Nature about 10 and a half years ago. Today we have 50 employees. We only service condos, and that's what we've done from day one, was just start doing lawn maintenance and snow removal for condo complexes.
We'll dive into the launch of your own business in a moment, but I want to touch back on the idea of working with your father and what it was like to be in a family business, trying to make your own way in the industry.
Certainly when I started working with him, I didn't know anything. And eventually, after probably 5 years, I got interested in technology and adding different things to the business. And keep in mind, I'm in my kind of early mid 20s, and my dad would have been in his mid to late 50s, I guess, at that time. So he has something that is working well for him, and he's worked for 15 years prior to me joining him on it. And I wanted to take all these chances, try all these new things, break stuff and grow the business and just try new things. And his, where he's at in life and his mindset is in a different place. We just weren't really aligned on that vision. And then something else that just always bugged me, I think it more so in my 20s than it would have now in my mid-30s, is just always being the owner's son. Like every success that the business would have, or I would have, it's just always a feeling of you didn't earn this on your own, right? Of course, it was never portrayed that way by my dad or anything, but just by people around you, and just the feeling that you didn't. I was working very hard, really stressed, really trying to make this business as good as I could make it. You still feel like, oh, you know, he gets the manager job and the nice truck or whatever it might be because he's the owner's son. And I really didn't like that feeling. And I always, you know, part of the reason I dropped out of high school and started just into the workforce was because I just wanted to make my own way, right? I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to get further education. I just wanted to get to work and start my life. So it was just a conflicting feeling there. That wasn't like a fight or anything with my father. I just wanted to make my own way, I think.
I think that's something a lot of people could probably relate to. There does seem to be a lot of family-based companies within landscaping and horticulture, and younger generations taking over for their parents are looking to make some changes that could create a lot of friction.
It probably took me 3 years from the day I started thinking about leaving my dad's company to actually talk to him about it. It was tough. But I didn't start my company right after. I left working with my dad's company. I started working with a company that installs AV equipment. I've always been into electronics and tech stuff. So for about a year and a half, I became an employee for a great company in Calgary, and we installed boardroom video conference systems and these types of things. And it was fun, but it really solidified that I wanted to be a business owner after being an employee. And I didn't know that it was a landscape company right away. I thought about it for a long time and discussed it a lot with my longtime girlfriend from high school, Michelle, who owns LBN with me today. And I started in landscaping only because I knew it already. Like I knew the trade. So, and I really like maintenance. I just really like the, you know, sell it once and it's recurring revenue type of thing. You know, going back then, I still didn't know that much about business, but I knew I could sell one contract and it would be worth many if I was to do just single family homes. And I knew how the business was, how to work with property managers, how the contracts need to look. And so I had a bit of a shortcut there, I guess. So yeah, that's why we started in that.
What do you think your life would have looked like now if you hadn't found your way into landscaping?
I think I would have still started a business. You know, I'm not like terribly passionate about the service, like the product that we deliver. I'm passionate about the business. I really like the business. So what I mean by that is there's definitely people in our company that are better at the trade than I am. You know, they mow straighter stripes and they know their plant ID is way better and they know the snow removal equipment a lot better. And those things are all fun. I like doing yard work, but I'm not as passionate about that as I am just the business itself. And I really like maintenance and recurring revenue. And I like the puzzle of trying to figure out how to do things more efficiently and all of that. So it's really just small business that I think I really like. So if I hadn't been introduced to landscaping by my father, I think that I would have still ran a small business. It came down to if I don't try this now, like at 26 or 27, I'll regret it forever, even if I fail. Like I want to try this, even if it puts me on the street, I'll go all in on this for 5 years and just really try it. Cause I was thinking about it every day. I'm listening to podcasts, reading books, and I'm just obsessed with trying it. So I just felt I really had to.
Usually when something is all consuming like that, it's a good sign that it's worth pursuing. A minute ago, you mentioned that you love the puzzle and solving problems.
Yes.
How was that instrumental when you were building out not only your landscaping business, but what you ended up doing next?
With landscape maintenance, oftentimes landscape maintenance and snow removal in our company anyway, you know, it's flat rate sales, like the revenue is all flat rate. And the more that you can get done, the more you make, or the quicker you are, the more you make. And so there's a there's just a really neat puzzle there. If you can do some research and collect the data and make your drive times a little bit less, or you can mow the grass a bit quicker, you do better. And I really enjoy tracking all the stats and all the data and sitting down and just brainstorming with the people I work with and trying to figure all those things out is really, really fun. So one of the problems that we always had doing condos is with enhancements or upsells, whatever you call them. They're called something different, it seems, in every province and state. But they're basically outside of your flat rate, you know, monthly dues. There's a shrub to replace or a tree pruning to do that's outside of the contract. You know, on large townhome complexes, there's usually 100 of those things if you walk around and pay attention. So tracking them all and tracking all the requests from customers, there's, you know, emails and emails and emails about them. And when you do a walk around with a customer, you see tons more that you'd like to recommend. There was just always a problem with keeping track of all of these things. And we eventually developed Issue ID to solve the problem. But originally we had Google Maps with pins all over it and spreadsheets tracking all these things. The beauty of these services are that usually when they're turned down, it's like not for now, it's not just a no. So it's oftentimes the customer's not typically getting a bunch of bids to get this shrub replaced. They just don't have it in the budget this year, and they'll get it done next year or the year after, which means you're going to have to quote it again, and you're going to have to remember that you quoted it last year and they wanted to talk to you about it next year. And this is where all the problem lies, right? Traditionally, we would send an estimate through LMN, which we love, but the estimates would just die in the inbox of the customer, and you know, we'd kind of forget about them too. So with Issue ID, it helps us to manage our sites. Like, we're very good at managing our customers and our crews and tracking time and all those things through LMN. But managing your sites and all of those little tasks, like the thing your maintenance crew missed that you saw, they missed weeding the bed in the back, or the customer asked for a quote on the mulch upgrade or whatever it may be. Those are all the things that LMN, Aspire, and so on, just we could never get them to do well at. So Issue ID really helped us with that. We started building that 2.5 years ago, and it's been pretty fun to go from landscaper to tech entrepreneur.
So at this point, Landscapers by Nature has been running well for a number of years, and you're developing this idea of creating a solution for tracking all those smaller side projects that get missed in a standard contract. What's the next step? How do you build out that idea to become something more robust?
With Issue ID, it started obviously as us having the problem and then me mentioning it to a lot of my friends and peers through the coaching group that I'm in. And through that, we just found that there wasn't really a solution. Like, the spreadsheet and the map that we have is as good as was available out there from our, you know, from our testing it out for a couple of years prior. And eventually I met up with Jason Hoke, who owns A Cut Above Landscape way down in Denver. You know, I'm all the way up in Calgary, but they have these group events a couple times a year through the organization where all the members meet up. And so that's where I met Jason, and his business partner in ACA, Jonathan, has a tech background. And we went out one day and had some beers, and we're talking about this problem, and we're all entrepreneurs. And Jonathan, with the tech background, we just started really thinking about it and thought, you know, maybe this would be a lot of fun. And it's funny, as an entrepreneur, I think I have no idea what I'm doing in tech, or I had no idea at this time. It was just like a how hard could it be kind of a thing, right? Of course, it's way more challenging than you'd expect, like any business. But that's kind of how it got started. Like any good idea, a couple of beers at the pub and us saying, let's go for it. Yeah, we set off with Michelle and I, Jonathan, Jason, and Jonathan's friend Craig to make it a reality about 2.5 years ago. So it was nice because we had already proven that there was a solution. Like, we can guinea pig it in our own two landscape companies. And we've lived the problem very, very deeply. So, and we kind of tested the idea just through, like I say, spreadsheets and so on. So yeah, we knew it was a good solution already.
Yeah, you already had the solution. You just needed the right vehicle to make it easy to use and put into play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is this a software platform? Is it an app? How would other landscapers use it? And what difference would it make in their day?
Yeah. So if you, particularly if you have a maintenance division, like lawn care division, maintenance division, it can be helpful in construction too, but it's really well suited for what we do, which is maintenance. Yeah. Just find it online, issueid.io. It's a subscription software service. There's an app that goes with it too on Android and Apple. And it just enables you to take a photo of the issue that you found on the site. It pins it on a satellite map for you and the customer to keep track of. And you can add a template to that photo that gives it a price, a description, a note. And then it almost gives you like an online store experience for your customer and yourself to plan out when to address these issues. So as I said earlier, you know, a lot of these things are not no's, they're just not for now. It requires expertise and planning to know when to get them done. Customers asking to plant all new trees, but you know they need irrigation repairs. So you can just put everything in one place for them and plan that out over a number of phases or years while you're still their maintenance contractor. You say, let's get the irrigation repairs done this year. Next year, we'll plan out, you know, tree removals and then tree planting the next year, or resodding the yard, whatever it may be. So yeah, if you're having, you know, if the listeners are having problems keeping track of all those things and getting lots of email requests, especially for the small things that often feel annoying, like that, it just kind of feels like you have to quote the one dead shrub that the customer is asking for because you're their maintenance contractor. But it's like to send someone to replace one shrub is sort of annoying. It's about being a lot more proactive and turning them into projects and having real discussions about improving your customer's landscape over time than just doing little one-off things. It really makes enhancements a great part of your maintenance company and makes it way more profitable. They're a lot higher margin typically.
That makes so much sense because going out to a site to fix something small might not feel worth it. But if you can knock at least two or three things off that list, then it starts to feel more significant. It probably adds up to a solid half day or full day's work. And then that is worth the gas and the effort of sending a crew out. So I can see that really helping with the flow of your staff and equipment and materials needed to complete tasks and knock them off your to-do list.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, what do your day-to-day operations look like? How hands-on are you with both the software company and the landscaping company?
With the software company, I'm certainly not the tech guy. I'm the guy that knows the trades. And that's, if there are tradespeople thinking about starting a software, that's an important marriage to get right, is finding the product people, the people that can build this for you, understand what you're saying from the trades perspective, what will work and what's simple enough for crews to use and things like that. So my day-to-day is speaking with other landscapers about the problems that I know they're likely having, they're probably similar to mine, and just going through that together. So it's a few meetings a week. Some weeks there's podcasts and conferences and things like that that I get to do as well. But we're all very remote and working from our garages and homes. And that's about it with Issue ID. With landscapers by nature, in the last couple of years especially, our managers are fantastic. We've got an operations manager, people and culture manager. We've got account managers. We call them zone managers that manage different territories of Calgary. And then a tremendous team under that as well. A lot of long-term staff and yeah, some really solid retention. So it's a lot about teaching those managers what I knew over time. And now a lot of them have surpassed me in skill set. So I meet with them a couple times a week. I'll help out with more challenging contract sales if there's particularly large contracts that one of the zone managers wants some assistance with. I'll step in and do those meetings with them and those kind of things. So just sort of like maybe a subject matter expert that can step in and help out where needed. With LBN, we have some pretty grand plans. We've always been extremely strict about the customer type that we work with. So it's always been that way for us. I really like to focus on doing one thing really, really well. So we never got into design, build, construction or arbor work or anything like that, like many companies of our size often open other divisions in. And I think that with our team support, we'll stay in that realm. So we've built quite a scalable model, and I think that we'll continue scaling up around the city of Calgary and move into some of the surrounding cities. And there's so many condos being built in Calgary. It's crazy. There's a big demand for the work, and we happen to be really good at it because it's all we've ever done. So we'll keep growing in the space that we are.
Running a company with friends can be complicated, but even more so when your spouse or your life partner is involved. You're actually running two companies with Michelle, your partner of 21 years. How do you maintain that healthy life-work balance so that it enhances your relationship instead of disrupting it?
So I worked with my dad before. So from the age of 18 to 37, you know, current times, I've always worked with family or friends, and, you know, and then made good friends with people I worked with after they joined the company too. So it's always been something I've had to balance. I think it really comes down to who you surround yourself with, whether they're friends, family, or otherwise. And working with Michelle is a pretty easy example to give. She's a chartered accountant. I'm the furthest thing from that. So we just knew our strengths and weaknesses and what parts of the business that we run. It's always, you know, I wouldn't say we've had zero problems with that over the years, but both of us are pretty logical people, and we'll sit down and study something. Like, for example, if I want to go and buy a bunch of new equipment, she'll run the numbers, of course, and we'll sit down and make the decision together. And that's sort of where, you know, at work, our worlds will collide. One of the really nice things about working with your spouse, your partner, is that your lives are kind of on the same path. So, you know, if your partner has a traditional career that they're trying to move up on, you know, working downtown, and they have a more traditional type career, and you're an entrepreneur that's trying to build an empire, build a business, and you're traveling around and going to peer group things and conferences and doing all of, you know, all these other things, you might have a different dream than your partner does. So working with them full time really has that advantage where you're going to achieve goals together at the same time with your business. That's certainly, you know, evident for us when we're speaking with other couples or traveling with other people. And we're, you know, Michelle and I are in the hotel room all day because we have to catch up on work. That's can be a really tough balance to find, I think, for people that don't work together. So yeah, there is a lot of advantages to it as well.
That's a really great insight. It could be assumed that too much time together could be a bad thing for some couples, but it sounds like it's actually something that unites you in your goals and values and hopes and dreams.
It's not a work-life balance. It's a work-life harmony. You know, we'll talk about work at dinner and talk about work at breakfast, and it's just fun. It's a project we work on together, right?
Work-life harmony. I love that. Tell me about the strategy of how you find and hire people for your company. You had mentioned earlier that you have some longtime staff, low turnover. You've got about 50 employees year-round at Landscapers by Nature. How did you build such a great collection of people?
Through a lot of failures and lesson learning, I would say, first of all, companies, you know, 10 and a half years old. Our longest time staff member, Parker, has been with us over 8 years. So from running it from my garage to, you know, the current size. And, you know, it comes down to knowing what the vision of your company is, what you're trying to build, even from a fairly small size. Not to worry any listeners if you know, you're like 1 year in and you don't know exactly what you're doing, that's fine. But you want to be able to cast a vision for people in an interview and say, this is what we're building, this is who we are, this is where we hope to be in a year or two. And you're trying to understand, is this someone that understands that and is interested in helping you get there? And are they going to get along? Like the kind of, I think we took this from somebody else I met through BTA, but you know, the beer and barbecue test is an important one during an interview too. Like, is this a person that I would want to have over to my house for a barbecue or share a beer with, you know, at the pub? And and you start to add like-minded people to your company, and you have to be quite relentless at that, I think. And you'll make a lot of mistakes, of course. You know, we have 50 staff, but you know, we've had hundreds of staff that we've worked through over the years to find this team. So getting rid of people very quickly when it's clear they're not the best fit, even if they're super good producers and might make the company a lot of money, if they're jerks, they got to go. And eventually you just have like a critical mass of great people in your company, and they edit out the bad people very, very quickly. It's really neat once you get there. And the opposite will happen too, which I've been in as well, where you have a critical mass of the wrong people, and then it's very hard to attract and keep the good people because they don't want to work with those people. So yeah, it's just being meticulous and very careful about who you bring on and keep.
Do you think the size of your company matters? Is it a different dynamic when you have 50 people versus 5 people or whatever number in between? And are there advantages to growing that team in order to find more quality people?
It's much, much different operating a company this size than it was when we were very small. There's obvious advantages when you're larger. Like, you know, if a staff member calls in sick, it's not a third of your workforce. So you have a lot more levels of management and a lot more people that can pick up the slack if someone's on vacation. You can generally afford better staff. You know, you can really focus on making your company like the go-to company in your market to work for. So reputation is important. Of course, traditionally people think of that with their customers, but with your competitors and with your staff, it is as well. Because in your market, if you're the go-to landscape company to work for, recruiting is a lot less difficult. So working on those things is one advantage, and it's a little bit easier as you get larger. Yeah. And you just start to build up a great team to help you make decisions. You know, as I said earlier, it's a lot about people, and you start surrounding yourself with more and more amazing people to help you grow this business. At our size, I can still be involved with a lot of the major decisions, but I don't have to do all the work. And I also have a lot of other people to tell me when it's a bad idea or when we should wait and do that later. You know, we sit down and build annual plans together. It's not just me and Michelle when we were smaller. So we'll build our annual goals and sales goals and so on, and visit those things as a leadership team, which is fantastic. You know how difficult it is when you're a small business owner, you know, of a company with 10 or 15 employees. There's never been more pressure than that, you know. So somehow it gets easier in some ways as you get bigger, which was very surprising to me from when I was smaller.
In a conversation we had earlier, you were telling me that being able to supply better training programs and upskilling opportunities for your staff became easier as your company got bigger.
Yeah. So when we were smaller, we just generally, you're less sophisticated too. You know, when you're running the smaller business, the owner's on their own journey too. They're learning along the way and learning how to run a company with 5 employees and 15, then 25. And it takes a completely different person to be able to run a 50-person company well than a 5-person company. It's the same person, you just got to learn along the way. So with staffing and development, when we were smaller, we were always just trying to find landscapers, like thoroughbred landscapers, right? That just know the trade really well. You know, I've got to move snow next week, or I've got to do spring cleanups. And I don't have like a big bench strength of people just waiting to move up into crew leader roles when I was small. So we're always trying to just hire somebody ready to go. And over time, you start to build bench strength, and you know, we started to really learn how to develop people from someone who's never used a line trimmer before to be our supervisors in our company over a couple of years and move them up really quickly. A lot of that came down to putting it on them, giving them like self-directed options to improve themselves and just showing them the path, and like you drive down the path. So a lot of our compensation programs are, you know, we can lay them out in an interview. We can say, here's what you'll make at each level in the company, and here's how you get there. You might need to get a certification, you know, an external education through Landscape Alberta or SEMA or something to that effect. You might need to take some training from our other managers on a weekend or an after work thing, you know. Once you start checking these boxes, you start moving up. And when you can just lay out a plan, it really makes the cream rise to the top too, because the people who are eager now see exactly how they are going to accomplish their goals, and they can somewhat go out and just do it themselves.
So it sounds like by opening your talent pool to include people who might not have a landscaping background, but who have the right attitude towards learning and enthusiasm for customer service, that is what has been really crucial in building a stronger team.
Yeah, of course. That's the key to freedom from your business, you know, is building up all the people around you and sharing the journey with them.
There's a phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I really love that. And I see it often with landscapers. There's a real commitment to training and growing, not just growing plants and landscapes, but growing potential in people. And that's a really exciting thing to see repeated over and over in all these different kinds of landscaping companies that I encounter.
Yep, definitely.
You had mentioned that school wasn't really for you. You left just before the end of grade 12. How does one learn the entrepreneurial skills, those leadership skills, necessary to run a business, maintain a team of 50, and feel confident in building out a second company in a totally different discipline without some formal training?
I mean, I only know what's worked for me. There's many people that go to school and get MBAs and then start great businesses, and many of them that don't. But for me, it was like trial by fire, like just go try it, just go start. And yeah, getting out of high school was, all the parents listening, it was great for me. It might not be great for your kids, but getting out of an environment where I just felt like I was wasting my time. I felt like I was smart enough to just get started, and I was ready to just bet on myself. I didn't want to go and get education. And it wasn't a situation where I got kicked out of school. It was a situation where I left school, right, to go and start my life. So my job through high school was a mattress salesman, a commission furniture salesman. Full-on commission sales is an eat what you kill type of environment. You're writing your own paycheck. And so that was actually a great introduction into that type of lifestyle. I saw my dad be an entrepreneur and a business owner my whole life since I was a little kid. So it didn't seem that abnormal. You know, he was working his tail off, and he'd miss birthdays and family events. And although it's, you know, it's disappointing at the time, as you grow up, you understand, especially if you start a business, then you really understand what it takes and how, you know, how hard those sacrifices are on the individual, you know, doing it too. But yeah, for me, it was just betting on myself. I committed to doing it. I told myself I was going to do it whether I failed or not. You know, I considered that I would be employable, like the worst case scenario, the realistic worst case scenario, if I put a bunch of money into this landscaping company when I started it and it totally failed, I would have, you know, lost some time, which is a bummer, but I would still be able to get a job and start over. And that to me sounded a lot better than never trying it. So I just had to give it a go.
I do think it's important for people who are considering a career in the green trades to know that there is no one defined path here. And entry can mean coming in from a formal degree in horticulture or design, or climbing up the ladder from entry-level crew member right out of high school to lead hand to eventually owner. There's no one path that's right and sure to be successful. But it has to feel right for that individual to, like you said, bet on themselves and make things happen. So I think it's good to show that there are still opportunities for people who have that self-discipline and drive, even without formal education.
Yeah, there's no boss there to tell you to get to work. Like, as long as you know you're not going to just sleep in every day and procrastinate everything, and you're going to do what you've told yourself you're going to do, then I don't see any bigger challenge than that. It's like a you versus you situation.
So Brandon, I have this one last question for you, and it's something I'm going to start asking all of my guests on the podcast. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself at the start of your career? What wisdom would you share with 20-year-old Brandon?
Probably to invest in Amazon. I mean, I would say, looking back from over the last 10 years, like just talking about LBN specifically, the journey has been more difficult than I expected back then. I just didn't know anything back then. And it's also been more rewarding in almost every sense. I didn't realize I would have to evolve I'd have to learn so much. I would have to evolve, make new friendships, meet new people, and evolve as a business person, because I just didn't know what I didn't know. So although it's been a lot harder than I expected, and I don't know if I would have proceeded if I knew how difficult it was going to be, it's been a lot more rewarding. As for advice, like a shortcut, I would say the biggest impacts that I've had have been from the people that I've surrounded myself with. I didn't have all those connections or relationships when I started. And so things like joining peer groups or coaching groups, there's some fantastic ones out there. There's probably some scams out there. So, you know, do your research, ask for some references, but there's some incredible ones out there. And just surrounding yourself with other business owners that are going through the same thing or are a bit further ahead than you is a game changer. And I realize those things can be expensive, and there's a lot of free ways to do that as well, right? Like you know, there's a lot of, in every city, there's, you know, little get-togethers for entrepreneurs. There's conferences like the GISC conference in Red Deer. Those are like, there's low cost options to get great education and surround yourself with people, make new friends. Those are the biggest things. There's great podcasts and YouTube channels, like podcasts like this one. If I can name drop a couple, I will highly recommend one of the greatest of all time, Jonathan Potoshnik. He's out of Dallas, built an incredible landscape company that he still owns, built and sold a software company called Service Autopilot. He just started a podcast on YouTube. So I'd highly recommend checking him out. Mark Bradley has some great, like, he tours around and does these two-day sessions from LMN. Even if you're not an LMN user, there are some of the most motivating and impactful days that you'll go through as a business owner. Contractor Revolution is an awesome one. And of course, my own podcast is The Beer Garden with me and Jason. So that's a good one, of course, too. So it's all about people. That's what I'd recommend. Surround yourself with good people, and that'll help you with everything else.
I love that. That's very sage advice, because we can accomplish a lot of great things when we're with people who share that journey with us. And your suggestions for finding ways of networking outside of your inner circle and expanding your learning opportunities through conferences, podcasts, YouTube videos, there's all kinds of resources out there. The answer to just about everything is available if you just go looking for it at the time you need it. So I encourage people just to keep on learning. If anyone wants to learn more about you, Landscapers by Nature, Issue ID, or the Beer Garden podcast, how can they find you?
So the Beer Garden you can find on YouTube quite easily. Issue ID is issueid.io. You can find me on LinkedIn. Feel free to add me on there, on Facebook, and send me a message. I'm always happy to connect with people. And Landscapers by Nature, if you're someone who's interested in working with a great company or hiring a great company, condos only, you can reach us at landscapersbynature.com.
That's fantastic. I'll be sure to include all those links in the show notes and in the downloadable transcription. I hope people will seek you out and try to learn more from your journey, because you've had a lot of experiences that I think will relate to many people, you know, especially as they're exploring different career paths and their landscaping careers and thinking about what else they could be doing next. There are so many options, And you just helped show that almost anything is possible when you have that curiosity and the drive to see a problem and find a solution. So thank you so much, Brandon, for sharing your story on the podcast today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I wonder how many listeners are now thinking about the problems that they can solve and how they can turn that into a new business idea. If that's getting your creative wheels turning, definitely connect with Brandon if you'd like to learn more about his journey. And don't forget to turn to your CNLA or your Provincial Landscape Trades Association to see what resources they offer for business and skills development. You might even be lucky enough to find a group of fellow entrepreneurs to bounce ideas off of, like in the peer-to-peer network at Landscape Ontario. Like Brandon said, surrounding yourself with good people is the key. And no matter what field you're in, innovation can come from anywhere. And sometimes the biggest opportunities come from the challenges we face in our day-to-day work. Whether you're looking to pivot careers, solve a problem in your industry, or just take that first step towards entrepreneurship, I hope today's interview inspires you to think outside the toolbox. If you'd like a transcription of today's episode, I've posted it in the other relevant links on this episode's webpage at landscapeontario.com/podcast. As always, I'd love to hear from you. So reach out with your story ideas, suggestions for guests, and any other feedback. You can email me at podcast@landscapeontario.com. Thanks again for listening. And don't forget to tune in to future episodes. I've got some great interviews lined up that you won't want to miss. Until next time, I'm Karina Sinclair for the Landscape Ontario podcast.